To the first session of 2021 for Tangerine SDR and Hamsai Personal Space Weather Station. My name is Dave, KV0S. And this week I had my magnetometer working nicely outside and we had an ice storm and my hole filled up with water, found a leak.
Oh no.
And I fried one of Scotty's boards, but actually the P&I board was fine, except the one that Scotty sent me doesn't work. So I need to get that back. Never did. Ever
you didn't order the optional extra smoke.
No, yeah. But I did get this one with a little bit of water, and I tried cleaning it with some deionizer and stuff. It didn't really work, but Dave helped me out with this replacement board, so I'm back up and running collecting data.
Yeah, water really shouldn't hurt it, because that's how all the things are washed when they're put through the wave machine.
Well, it was the voltage on the pins.
It's on, it'll hurt it.
Yeah.
So
if they're truly off, it's different.
A number of the pins around the power supply turned green.
Oh, okay. That'll do it.
So, Dave, you want to send it back to me along with the P&I board, and I'll send
you. Okay. Okay. Sure thing.
Or send Dave a new one.
Yes, I'm using Dave's number 5, I believe. So, yeah.
Scott, I like that it turned green, just like the jewelry I gave my first wife.
Scotty will put it on the environmental qual failure wall.
Yes.
Yes, I will send that back. So that was I am back up and running collecting data. And so that's my experience for the week. Next on the list, we have Nathaniel, W2NAF. Go ahead, Nathaniel.
Thanks, Dave. I spent a lot of this week reorganizing the cables in my ham shack. So I did a lot of cable management. And as a result, I now have running a Kiwi SDR, a Edis radio with the brand new 14 core computer and 128 gigabytes of RAM. I have the Grape running, and I also have an RBN receiver running on 8 bands. So all that's running simultaneously. I think it's going quite nicely. And then tomorrow we're going to be meeting with the Hamsai workshop planning committee, which includes Christina Collins, Bill Lyles, Dev, Lori McCoy, myself, and Phil Erickson won't be able to make it. But one of the important things we're going to be talking about is what the theme is of the meeting and who we're going to invite for tutorial speakers. So right now what we're thinking of is doing a theme of mid-latitude ionospheric science. And the reason we're thinking of doing that is because the Personal Space Weather Station, all the continental United States and Europe, which is where most of the people who are going to be participating in this live in the mid-latitude ionospheric region. So we want to know what kind of science we can do with that. So for the tutorial speaker, I'm thinking of inviting right now, actually, my PhD advisor, Mike Rahonomy from Virginia Tech. He is a super darn guy, and they've been doing mid-latitude radars for about the past a little over 10 years. They've put in these new radar systems. But I'd also be happy to hear some suggestions for, we usually have a representative from the amateur radio community too, to give a tutorial from the amateur radio perspective. So if anyone has suggestions on amateur radio tutorial speakers, I would be happy to hear them. So back to Nat.
Very good. And next on the list is Dave, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, yes. Hello, everyone. I'm not sure what I've been doing altogether. I know I've worked on code off and on pretty much the last week, I think, one way or another, but different things. Just trying to get usable code for all concerned out in people's hands. That's pretty much it.
Well, fine business. And next we have Greg, VA3CBN. Go ahead, Greg.
As usual, I'm just going to soak up all your knowledge because you guys are so smart.
Right.
I just finished my last day of vacation. I'm back to work tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So I'll stand by and listen to all your knowledge.
Okay. And next on the list, we have Scotty. He's back from the land of the green.
Land of the grain?
Sick.
The land of the COVID-19 is what I'm back from. So not much going on, just getting back up to speed. Not anything to report this week, but pretty much over the bad part and just kind of resting now. So the fatigue is still with me a little bit, but getting better day by day. So that's where we're at today. Back over to you, Dave.
Is Nona well now, too?
Yeah, she is. She's because she gave it to me. So, you know, it's better to receive. So I've been a couple of days behind her in symptoms. And we're pretty well over it here, just except the tiredness persists a little bit. But other than that, everything's pretty much good.
Okay. Well, good. Vaccines are coming.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Scotty.
Yes.
Thanks, Tom.
Welcome back.
Glad you're healthy.
Yeah, the biggest part of it was not knowing whether you're going to be one of the ones that dies or whether you're going to get better, you know. So you're laying there going like, well, which is it going to be? Okay.
didn't have much pneumonia?
No, I had a cough, which is still a little bit with me, and mostly fever, low-grade fever, about 100 degrees for about 5 days, and aches and pains and tiredness. Yeah. Mostly the tiredness was from not eating.
Yeah.
Because, and I could eat. It's just that I did lose taste. And when you lose taste, you just can't eat anything. It's just nothing sounds good. Even your favorite stuff, the cherry pie, ice cream, nothing. Tastes the same. So consequently, you don't eat. So the biggest thing you had to do was keep yourself hydrated, keep drinking. Yes. And I had no problem keeping anything down. It was just that you don't think about it. You're laying there and, you know, feverish and you just want to lay there and sleep and you never drink or eat anything. And so the good news is I lost 10 pounds. So that's
it's a hard way to do it.
Yeah.
It's
I think there'd be an easier way to lose 10 pounds.
I wouldn't want to lose the rest of the weight that I have to lose that way, but it's a beginning start anyway.
So
got to start on your New Year's resolutions.
Right. Don't eat anything for a month. That's my New Year's.
So next on the list is Dan in for XWE.
Oh, thank you, Dave, and hello, everyone. Well, for the first time in about 6 months, my microphone on my camera started working. Just did mostly the holiday thing this weekend. Watched a good football game, and that was about it. Back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business. And let's see. Next on the list is Bill, KB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Good evening to you and Scotty. I am so glad to see that you're back. I was really worried because we've had friends who didn't make it. So,
yeah, I talked to my contractor. He lost 4 people who died in December from this.
Oh, my.
So, wow. Like I said, you're laying in bed going like, is it going to be me next or am I going to get better?
I think we've lost 8 people in our church so far. So it's anyway, very, very stressful. But I'm so glad to see that you're okay. Anyway, haven't been that busy. I got the grape up and running that John sent me and collected a bunch of data that really wasn't valid because I've been struggling to get the right antenna. Finally, what I ended up with is I put up I ordered an MFJ magnetic loop, which I think will work well, but they're on back order, so I don't know when I'll get it. So independently of that, I'm trying to finish up a 5-band DXCC, and I need a lot of 80-meter stuff, so I put up an 80-meter inverted V, and it's developed some problems. I think maybe I got a cold solder joint, but it works great as a receiving antenna for the grape. So I have I still have the 80 meter dipole, which I can use for the mostly FT8 DXing, even though it's only about 15 feet and the inverted V is at 50 feet. So anyway, So we're fooling around with that. But I think we're getting what looks like pretty much good data now. So, John, thanks for the info on that. I've compared the latest stuff that I've got. I'm not getting the bad files anymore now that I have an antenna regularly on that. The data is sometimes polluted because I watch FLDigi on the system, and I can see that when I transmit, that there's weird stuff showing up in FLDigi, but it seems like it recovers though. So that's good news. Been working with GNU Radio. As you recall, I've gotten the Tangerine localhost emulator to where I can spit out UDP data and then display it using the GNU Radio and a UDP data source. The one thing that's strange is so far, I've gotten it to work on other systems. I have not been able to get it to work if the GNU Radio instance it's running is running on the same Pi as the local host is running. Now, it could be related to how UDP works when you try and send from using the same port on a device. Maybe the system doesn't support the concept of using a UDP port to pass data between two processes running on the same system. Maybe that's not supported. I don't know. I have to investigate that a little bit further. Or it could be also that maybe the Raspberry Pi doesn't have enough compute horsepower to be able to take the data generated and then pass it through the port and then display it through everything you got to do an FFT and a waterfall. So I'm investigating that. Also, I decided I need to get GNU Radio and rebuild it because if you've ever looked at the waterfall from the FFT waterfall in GNU Radio, it's a little bitty. It's only about this big. You know, you can't have this great big long history. But I tracked down in the code that's hard coded. The height of that thing is hard coded. And I'm going to see if I can change that variable in the code. It's set for 200 pixels, I think. And I think I needed about 600. So we're going to see if we can build it and get a larger spectrum scope that looks a little bit more like what you get in a spectrum lab. So that's what I've been doing. Okay, back to Ned.
Fine business. next on the list is Dave. N1HAC. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello, everyone. I'm doing some playing with magnetometers. I have the Tangerine magnetometer in the box outdoors. Watertight, I hope, but I guess I'll go out and check it.
Well, it will stop sending data when you get water.
Right.
That's it, we've from been experience.
Getting, we've been getting the kitchen sink for weather here. But I've had out there, and then I've been working with scientific grade one, but it's not giving good data right now. I may have one out of three good channels. It was, after all, shut down for almost 20 years. Last data it gave was 2002, I think. But it is, there's something there. I have a third one that I need to box up in a waterproof case. It's one of the Bartingtons that we use for our balloons and sounding rockets. So also a scientific grade that I'll get out there and stick it next to the Tangerine mag and see how they compare. The one thing I need to put out there though is the problem in comparing data, because these things are all going to have logs in different formats. So I'm not sure how one might handle that. The other side is that I'm hoping to get some time working with various prototype receivers that we'll be feeding into this project. See if I can get familiar with the coding for those guys, because I understand we're going to need some FPGA help along the way. So back to Net.
Fine business. Next on the list is Dev. Go ahead, Dev.
Good evening, everyone. So we are having a good start of the new year here in Scranton. I took holidays during the holidays. I did not work much, and now I'm gradually getting back to the work. I spend the day debugging the Chop Sounder 2 code developed by UHA. So I'm trying to achieve a small task here, which I hope I will be able to in not a long time. Thank you.
Okay, very good. And next on the list is Gary, AF8A. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. Happy 2021. Not much to add other than it's pretty obvious that a lot of groundwork has been done up to this point, and that 2021 should be a pretty productive year, and we should see a lot of exciting things happen. So looking forward to that. Back to Ned.
Very good. You're just right. And next on the list, let's see, we've already hit Greg. So Homan. Homan's here. So go ahead, Homan.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Happy New Year to all. Yeah, things have been going slowly. I've been just working on documentation and stuff, but otherwise nothing really particular to report.
So, very good. Back to you. Well, next on the list, we have James, KG4DSG. Go ahead, James.
Well, Happy New Year to all. I'm just sitting here listening in. I do have a comment for Bill. Do you know anything about GQRX?
Never heard of it? No, not familiar with it. No.
It's an SDR application, but it's built on GNU Radio, and it's completely open source. And it's got a full screen waterfall you might want to steal.
But it is quite elaborate.
Oh, yes. Yes.
If you dig into the code, there's a lot of pieces there.
I haven't looked at it, but I know it's available. So with that, back to Net.
I'll take a look at it. I always go down these rabbit holes, and then I'm up 2 weeks later and says, well, it turns out we can't use this after all. That's normal.
Okay. Let's see. After James, I guess we're John would be the next on the list. Go ahead, John.
Let's see. What did I get done? After Christmas, I delved into a project for school, which was a 4-inch high LED clock for the wall that does UTC time. Got the boards laid out and shipped, and they're shipping from Shenzhen, China, even as we speak. I got two 250-foot runs of the Cat6 cable pulled through my outdoor piping system. So I now have a working Cat6 cable from the shack here in the basement out to behind the shed, so I can put in the magnetometer stuff.
Yep.
The next thing to do is I've got the pipe figured out. I just plug it together and start making it work, but I haven't made the code for that work yet. Also spent a fair amount of time shipping and helping people set up systems. Like Nathaniel mentioned, I got his going. I got Bill's going. I've got another one in Columbus I've got to get going sometime this week. And then I've got four more I've got to ship. So I've run into a problem on the Raspbian that it no longer recognizes the sound card. It also seems to be grabbing it, and I can't use it as a USB device, and I have to figure that little snag out before I can ship the four cards. So if anybody's got experience with the sound drivers on the Raspbian OS, talk to me. Other than that, haven't been doing much of anything. Back to Net.
Sounds like you're just wasting your time away. No, I'm just joking. Next on the list is Jonathan, KC3EEY. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hi, everybody. I don't have too much to report. I was doing some experimentation with the TI audio board. And I found out that I do not need an external power supply. It is recognized as a sound card on a lot of operating systems. In fact, I was just playing around with it now, and when I Zoom changed over to the TI Audio USB sound card that it comes up with. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get it running on my FreeBSD system and see if I could get the pulse per second into one of the audio outputs and see if I can get the timing system of VLFRX tools running through it. Other than that, I've been doing some small work on my VLF receivers, some of the mechanical work with the boxes and enclosures, and I've also been playing around with some of my seismic stuff. Scotty, I'm very happy that you're okay. I've known a lot of people that were having a rough time, so I'm glad that you're okay. John, I have used a sound card with Raspbian for my Raspberry Pi VLF capture system. I don't know what problem that you're having in detail, but I could discuss it with you later if you like. See if I have any input. Other than that, there's not too much going on. Back to the net.
Yeah, the problem showed up right after the latest OS upgrade, so I made the mistake of upgrading the systems before I sent them out, and I shot myself in the foot. Back to net.
Well, Dan might have something to add to that. So next on the list, let's see. Looks like Jules, K2KG. Go ahead, Jules.
Yes, KGJ. That's all right.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, well, again, I'm really happy to see Scotty back. And Scotty, thank you very much. I got the board. Appreciate it. And you're looking pretty good, actually, for having gone through that. Yeah. John, I've also used the Raspbian with a sound card, but not the current version, and had no problems with it. This was with a insect sound recording system I did a couple of years ago. But I'd be curious to know what they changed in the latest update as well. I now have all three of my RM3100 boards, one dual installation and one single, running under a Python script, which is accurate to 1 second. So that's collecting data. And I've been working with Homan to try to determine what we're seeing as possibly an anomaly in the, let me call it the orthogonality of the three sensors on the RM3100 board, that independent of the specific orientation, whether we use a Z-axis sensor as a Z-axis sensor, or flip it 90 degrees and use the X-axis as Z-axis, it still delivers an error that is about 1500 nanoteslas. The other orientations are fine, and it could be the geomagnetic field predictions for this particular area from the online calculator I'm using. It may be off by a bit, and that may be the cause. But anyway, we're still working on that. And that's about it. Back to net.
Well, fine business. And next on the list is Michael, AAAK. Go ahead, Michael. Oh, fine business. And then we talked to Scotty, so we have Tom. Go ahead, Tom, N5EG.
My mouse is not clicking. I talked with Dave Witten a little bit, and he gave me some advice on WX Python and tool chains to use. Some of the popular tool chains are kind of unsupported now, so I got a VM spun up with the WX Python and the GUI Builder tool, and I've got another VM spun up with Qt5. So looking at just doing some softwares for register manipulation on the modules once they're ready to start to be debugged. Nothing fancy, just something to play with the register. So back to net.
Well, fine business. I was going to suggest to Bill he could play with Phosphor, but that may be overkill for what he wants.
Yeah, I've used Phosphor, and on a GTX 660, I can get over 200 mega samples per second display on Phosphor, so it's pretty fast.
But Bill, that's more points than you were talking about.
Yeah, also it's a much bigger bandwidth than I'm looking at too. I'm looking at, you know, maybe 10 hertz.
Yeah.
bandwidth. I mean, but you can squeeze a lot of points into 10 hertz if you sample it long enough.
Well, anyway, it's in GNU Radio, so I thought, well.
Yeah. It has a couple of neat features, one of which is that we'll show transient signals in a very light color on the display. And so if things shoot through the passband, you'll grab them and they'll sort of turn colors as they fade out. But I've not seen anything else that will capture transients as well as GR phosphor.
Well, that's kind of, I don't know how much Scott had to do with developing that, but that was what he was always after, is finding little transients. So anyway, sorry, we're open for general discussion.
Yeah, Dave Witten, did you want to elaborate on your email to the list about the timing problem with magnetometers?
Well, it's not with the magnetometers. It's with the software that we were using to read the magnetometer. You know, the stuff I have written up till now has been, you know, it started out as just a little hack to first get some data out altogether, you know, at all, and then more and more to tweak it. But still, it was just a polling loop that was not, you know, and I had no real concern about precision as it was going around. But Jules has, you know, pushed the envelope quite a lot, and he was seeing some difference between my code, and he had written stuff in Python, but he was using a scheduler function to kick off in Python, a fairly accurate scheduler that's available. I plan to go back and incorporate that sort of functionality in the C. But at the same time, I think John and the people using the grape and stuff need something that they can use and will write their log file format. Or their data format. And so I think I'm going to just freeze work on the older, the experimental code, get a newer program that I was writing that took out a lot of the junk. It's been kind of hanging in the wind for a couple of weeks. I'm going to try and get that knocked out so that's useful to John and company. And but I'm not going to put the scheduler function in because I'm not at all sure anybody really needs that kind of precision, you know, with the initiation of the samples. You know, there's just jitter in them because sometimes you'd miss one, at least it looked like you'd miss one. And I can do that. There's seems to be about three or four different levels. You can kind of go in Linux from, a dumb polling loop to all the way down to the task switch scheduler, I think. You can get at most of it somehow. But there are some intermediate ones that should be pretty good, and they make good sense, but why not be precise if it doesn't cost you much? But it's going to take, you know, I'll have to experiment with that. Somebody's, you know, just, it's one of those things someone has wrapped up very nicely in Python because there was a need. But in C, you know, I'm sure they did it in C, but to do it in C myself, it takes some experimentation.
Yeah, Dave, I will say that, you know, anybody that's using RunMag, it has all the features you need to do any evaluation that we're doing at this point. Plus, you can easily change the number of samples. You can easily change the cycle count. You've got an excellent logging function. Anybody who's out there experimenting with the RM3100, just go and continue using the current version of RunMag, because it really gives you the flexibility you need to do the evaluation at this point.
Unfortunately, it doesn't write the logging data, the log data, it, with file names that are organized the way that John and Bill seem to have envisioned. And there are some problems I have with a bit of it, but overall, there's, you know, there's no reason I can't do it. I just have to, you know, it's the nuisancey stuff of making sure I cover all the bases.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that I had sent you a copy of analysis.cxx, which is the module that is in FLDigi that is currently creating all these files we're saving.
Yeah.
And it has the creation of everything you're looking for in there.
Yeah.
In addition to that, I wanted to point out that the Grape Gen 2 is going to have a GPIO bit dedicated to the 1PPS coming off of the GPS module. So you will have direct access to that in the C code. And I'm going to be using that as a trigger for each 1 second epoch of data.
Well,
so there won't be any operating system overhead in terms of when that shows up.
Uh-huh. We can see about using that in the future. At some point, this becomes less of a testing program and more of a simulator for what would on, you know, for the essentially, you know, almost a shim for in place of the it's doing some of the things that are done on the DE in the other unit, but we're doing it in software here, and we'll try to incorporate some of those things on there if that's the way you want to go with it. It's just a long ways from where I started, and it's not a problem at all.
Yeah, I would encourage if anybody's writing software for the creation of the file names to look at the document I created, because I've tried to solve a few problems by coming up with that document. And ultimately, if we all go our separate paths, and I've been on projects that have done this before, when it all comes together, Bill Engelke's head is going to explode because everybody's got different file formats. And I'm trying to avoid that by having something that's at least pointing in the same direction.
I completely agree with that. And I don't want to...
Let's talk about it.
Sure. I completely agree with that. It's just that there are a few points in there that didn't contemplate some of the uses, you know, like, you know, you have a radio, you know, I don't know where I've got it all mixed up. I was going to make some notes, but yeah. I didn't get that. Yeah, you know,
please send it to me and I'll put it in the document.
Yeah, because the magnetometer can easily be used without any radio at all,
right?
Or any, you know, a whole lot of these components. And there's some redundancy in the file name a little bit. I don't know. I'm not sure I understand. I read it over and over again, and I'm this way with documents. I like that. I keep finding new things I missed.
Yeah. Well, I know Nathaniel had some ideas about being able to look at the file name and understand by looking at it where it was and who created it and things like that and what it is just by the file name. But that's where a lot of that came from. Uh-huh. But if it's creating problems, let's fix it.
No, it's like if we have a day's log file, I'm not absolutely clear, but the date stamp in the file name itself, is that just... UTC month, day, year,
hour, minute, second.
It's the minute seconds that didn't seem very important to me, because that's all inside the file,
just the date. But then Nathaniel asked for the time, so that I put that in there.
My thought with that is if you stop recording the data file at some point, so normally you have one data file per day or one data file every 2 hours or whatever. But like, let's say all of a sudden you stop recording data and then you want to create a new data file. Well, if you have the hours and the minutes in the file name, then you know that you're not going to conflict with the earlier file name from that particular.
Okay. Well, that's in all of this, I've been working to make sure that there's always one file per day. But that every entry in that file is accurately stamped for in full detail. So you know if there are missing samples, which at the moment there are once in a while, you know when and where they occurred.
And the other thought,
if it ends early or starts late.
And another thought with that too is that for some of the instruments, the files are going to be larger than others. And so for those instruments, you may not want to have a full day's worth of data in a single file. You may want to break it up into an hourly basis or something like that.
Well, this was all specifically concerning the, and I gather the file naming convention is universal for all the different kinds of data that you might be collecting.
It is, but it isn't, because Bill Engleby is working with a RF format, digital RF format, completely different. So that doesn't apply.
Yeah.
So in Dave's automatic system, your date time would be the date at 0000, because his program creates a new file every day at whatever time it rolls over.
It's exactly, and if it's how interrupted, if it's interrupted, it would be it would start up where it left off.
It's exactly what the grate does.
Yeah. Okay.
I only create one analysis file with a single date on it per day. If it has a 2-hour block in there, you didn't collect data. It just the date internally it accounts for that. But there's only one file generated per day right now.
Okay. Also, I was looking at the fields inside the in the data that's logged from the magnetometer, and you know it's dates. I think I was looking at it and saw that there was, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Now I'm envisioning you're going to have the date, the temperature, X, Y, and Z.
Two temps you had in there.
And then in the metadata, you're going to have your calibration vector.
Okay. Well, the only other thing in there that I personally kind of like to see, and it's pretty easy for me to calculate it in the software I'm writing, is the total field, you know, as an additional thing. And I think a lot of times people just want to look at that total field for one reason or another.
Sure.
You know,
there's nothing wrong with it. We do that same kind of thing in the radio.
Okay. I didn't want to add anything that I didn't see in the document.
So one other thing that Dave and I have come up with is, and probably Jules is doing this too, we have multiple devices that we're testing. And I've been just using my call sign with one or two or three after it.
Yeah, well, that's where the node stuff in the document I created, and I'd be more than happy to assign you a node number how they're assigned and why they are assigned.
So would you assign me three node numbers?
I've got three nodes running at my house right now.
How easy is, I mean, this is going to be a big task for you to keep up with all these node assignments.
What's going to happen is when the database goes online with Bill, he will be assigning them automatically.
Okay.
Right now, I just started it up because I knew we're going to get into trouble with everybody wanting one. And right now, I think I've got 25 nodes assigned.
Well, I have data that goes back to June for the magnetometer.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of that was inside the house, so I was just testing to see what it would do. But I have, you know, quite a few months of data.
Sure. Well, I've got data on my one grape that goes back to May of 2019.
Okay.
So I've been collecting, you know, data for almost 2 years on that system.
Okay.
So I understand what you're saying.
But assigning the node numbers, we could almost make a web page with a little database, you know, a SQLite database or something behind anything that would just would allow known users, you know, you log into it and then you can request another.
Well, the document thing. I wrote, I basically alluded to the fact that Bill is going to be doing that with the database since he's running it. He's really in control of all that.
When you add a device, it'll automatically generate a node number for it.
Right. But that's going to be a year and a half out or so, is my understanding. Yeah. Well, I'm concerned
and Dave's
about
wanting to log this data and keep it as close to the format that we'll eventually use as possible.
Great. So just tell me how many node numbers you want, and you got them. It's that simple. It's nothing harder than that. There's nothing sacred about it. I just made a comment in the document that node numbers 100 and less are for development. And we've used 25 so far, and I've got another 75 to go. So,
well, I would say that everybody Scotty sent magnetometers to, you ought to assign a number.
Exactly. So that's not a problem. I just took it upon myself to grab them and put them into a spreadsheet before it turned into a total rat's nest. But ultimately it will be handed over to Bill's engine to do this automatically and keep track of it. And there's going to be stuff in there that is going to be considered private, like your cell phone number or things like that for contact information, which is why I did not put the spreadsheet up on the document website or the GitHub account. I don't want to do that for personal privacy reasons. But that's the kind of stuff you have to be aware of. But if you need a node number, by all means, just send me an email.
Mm-hmm. When I look at the document that's kind of a fait accompli and suddenly see it doesn't fit with what we're doing, maybe you've anticipated these things. I just don't realize that because you got
one of the fields is magnetometer on the description. I actually have a magnetometer entry for the description of a node that has one on it. So we could talk about that offline, Dave.
Okay, because I can easily imagine me running a number of nodes.
I can see a node
no radios.
Yeah,
I don't. I have little reason to. I don't have any antennas.
And if that's within the spec, I mean that's fine.
Okay. I was afraid it was not.
No. But if I need to be more explicit about how we write that, I need to know that so I can update it.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I took a stab in the dark and I put it out there last July.
And that's commendable.
I know Bill read it and Nathaniel read it and a couple other people sort of glossed at it. But it's one of those things, it's a good resource for insomnia, but no, it's not something you want to be reading all the time. So
No. I'm very appreciative of it.
But let's fix it if it doesn't meet the requirements, because it's a stake in the ground to say this is wrong. We need to do this. And that's exactly what I'm trying to accomplish.
I just don't want to have anyone have to back up.
No,
at any point or bifurcate. Let's
fix it now and get it right. Yeah, that's the purpose of it. And you're not going to hurt your feelings. Trust me.
And you contemplate capturing data to some location, then checking it for things like extraneous characters, and then once it's acceptable, moving it to another location for upload.
Now is at the end of the day, I've noticed that when a Raspberry Pi has a hard power failure, it closes the file system, but the file allocation table doesn't point to the end of the last block. So the entire block gets filled with null characters. And when it starts up, it keeps those null characters and then it keeps adding to it. So I've got a program at the end of the day that goes through byte by byte and looks for a null character. If it sees it, it takes them out and scrunches them all together. Then I understand also what happens with the timestamp, and we fix the timestamp to get back in the sequence.
Yeah.
And we have that all written and working. Mm-hmm. But it's something that if you're doing CSV files that were valid data does not include the null character, we can apply that. Okay. But like, for example, Bill's RF data probably will have a null character as a valid character, and we can't do that. Mm-hmm. So, but it's something we need to talk about. And like I say, it's I've done a lot of this legwork already because I've had to account for it.
No, it's excellent.
And I want to share it so everybody doesn't have to recreate it.
It's excellent.
I don't know what I've done.
it's excellent. It's just that we're kind of, we've been operating independently, and which of course is what we want to avoid. but
until we have a platform that everybody can play with, it's kind of hard to interact with everybody because we're not talking about the same thing.
Absolutely.
If I had a grape station on everybody's lap, you could be able to, oh yeah, it does this when this happens, and we could talk about it. But until we have all grapes and tangerines out there running, it's hard to get together and say and point out problems because nobody else has experienced them yet. And had to solve the problem. So in that respect, I'm pretty far much ahead of everybody on the grape because I've had to solve a lot of system problems already that I've come up against and had to fix because otherwise things break.
Yeah. So no, this is great. Some of these things we won't find out until it is too late.
To try it.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the nature of the beast. But it's best to anticipate as many as possible, I think.
The weirdest is when you shut the power off and the file system gets corrupted and it throws the null characters in the file and starts appending to after that.
I found
that footprint, and I documented it in that document because I have an actual hex dump of what the insertion looks like and how I go through and pull it out and then back annotate the date stamps.
Yeah.
That's all in
the document. My code doesn't have, it's nothing special, but it doesn't have any sense of atomicity of a record per se, but I do flush frequently, early and often. I've always been of that.
Well, I know FLDigi opens the file once a second, writes it, and then closes it.
Okay. I don't go that far.
But if the system shuts itself down, the end file allocation table has the right end block for the last block of data in the disk sector. If you just shut power off, it hasn't done that yet. But FLDigi does a once, each epoch is open, write, close. Uh-huh. With always flushing the buffer, because I've never seen it lose a partial string of one ASCII entry per second. It's usually that whole block gets a bunch of null characters, depending on where you are in the 2K bit or 2K bytes of the block. And we wrote some programs to be able to flush that out and pull it out. So the most bizarre problem we've run into. But we were having problems with power goes out or somebody trips over the cord and pulls the plug out, you get that. But when the thing starts up again, it takes off on the same file because it looks at the date and figures it out where it's supposed to be. And if that file's been opened, it just keeps appending to it. So I only have one analysis file per day. And the assumption is right now with the grape one that it's one frequency. And Nathaniel wants me to be looking into the ability to be able to chain frequency midday and then have all the stuff happen. But one of the precursors, in fact, I just pushed up a document to the documentation directory now for how to change frequency at the end of the UTC day for grape generation one, which I sent, I think, to Bill, and I know I sent it to Nathaniel. And that's just for Gen 1, because like I say, Gen 1 is just a proof of concept for the Gradio. Gen 2 is going to be the first release for this project. But these kinds of problems are what we're running into and figuring out now, which will help.
Well, if just in the back of your mind, you can kind of put me on the end of that list, the people you send stuff to, even if it's not real, doesn't really concern me much. I'm good. It'd be nice to feel like I know what's happening. And
if you want to read anything that's probably the most valuable in that document, read the day in the life of a grape.
Yeah.
Because I walk through how the whole data collection goes, what happens if something goes wrong, how it fixes it, and all that stuff. Sure. So you get an idea of what the data flow looks like.
Sure.
So that's only two pages, so it's not so bad.
Sure. No, it's.
And I got pictures and all that kind of stuff from data dumps and what the file structure looks like, what the, like a hex dump of what the error file looks like, and it bad that Bill's been coming up with and stuff like that. So it's all in there.
I'm working from version 13 of that whole file. Worked it very carefully, but all I had was version 4 originally, and I have a copy of version 4, and then I have version 13. And
wow.
And so I missed a lot of intermediate stuff, didn't know much about it. I think I've overwritten version 4. Now.
Well, I'm going to be getting contact with you pretty soon when I start getting the magnetometer stuff ready to go. I still got to ship out between 4 and 6 more grapes. And once I'm finished making the wine with those, I'll be able to get back to the magnetometer.
Okay.
Or people stop whining about it. I have to think about that.
Yeah. That's the real test. Okay, great.
Back to net.
Well, we're in the open discussion, so.
Has anybody given any thought about the magnetometer if there's an issue with the XYZ interchangeability of putting in the ground in the three different orientations?
There has to be somewhere in the metadata. What is the orientation?
Yeah,
Would that be done by the calibration vector?
Yeah, if you do the rotation about the board itself, 90 degrees about the y-axis on the board, that turns z into minus x, and it turns x into z. I'm sorry, wrong way around. It negates one of them, and it's fairly easy to determine that. If you see a negative sign, then you know you've done the rotation.
I'm saying when you have a calibration vector for your zero reference, wouldn't that sort of pop out from that?
You probably should.
Because aren't we really interested in relative changes and not absolute numbers?
That's a question for Homan.
Ah.
Yeah, that is correct. Variation rather than absolute value baseline.
So once you stick the thing in the ground and you take, say, 1,000 samples and you get fairly nice tight standard deviation of, let's say 10 nanoteslas for, if you subtract this number, you get zeros for all axes and you put that in your metadata. And then when your data collection comes, you use that vector to subtract from the read to store as the data. So ideally, if things in a perfect world, nothing changes, all your X, Y, and Z numbers would be zero for that whole day. Is that really what my understanding with the procedure is here correctly? Because then your vector would be, this would be telling you what the difference is from what you consider normal. Does that make sense?
But basically what you do is to subtract the baseline, the average value of the day, subtract it, then what you see is going to be the variation. So no matter what you do, I think you will still see the variation. And what we're really interested in, actually, some type of variation that is associated with big events, such as like substorm or geomagnetic storm, or it could be, if you're lucky enough, we could see some kind of wave activity, which can have some, sinusoidal component.
Sure.
Right. If you look at the intermagnet data, that's the way it's produced there or displayed there. Namely, there's an average. So at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, it winds up at the same number. But in between, you see the variation into 24 hours.
So is the average calculated at the end of the data set for the entire data set, or are you using a previous day's average to start the next day's average, and then you modify it at the end of the day?
Right now, there's no average. It's
just absolute numbers.
Post-processed.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think for now, it's better to just report the entire value. And see, go from there. I mean, for some stations, for example, like Antarctic station that we run, just for the sake of saving data amount, we report only the variation. But I guess saving transmission is not a big concern for us, right?
The numbers are very much. These numbers aren't that big.
Right. So we don't really concerned about. I mean, we're talking about iridium communication, which is very much limited. For Antarctic measurement, but we're not talking about, we are highly civilized, so I guess we don't need that. So I think everything can be taken care of afterwards, like post-processing. So what we report is the entire value, and then let's think about it later.
That makes sense, because that's sort of in line with what Nathaniel had asked for, in terms of we have the raw data, and we have access to all of that. So in 2 years, when we change what we want to look for, we have the raw data to work with, nothing that's been manipulated. So,
yeah. So but then the philosophy is then minimizing the local processing, keeping raw data, keeping all the raw data, saving all the raw data, and then you can process it later.
Right.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. Okay. We always keep the very original data. That's the engineering data.
That makes sense.
Yep.
Is it still all right for me to capture the total field. I like the total field in there. And
one thing that Dave does is he has a very nice output page based on the settings at the time you're collecting it. And it would be nice to somehow get that, at least that information, incorporated into the metadata.
Yeah, because well, that's the metadata file, that'll save it for you every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's but that doesn't correspond, a lot of it doesn't correspond to anything in the existing metadata.
And well, but I'm saying is it tells how things were collected. And the other thing that I find useful for myself is, you know, there's half a dozen parameters you can set. And right now I'm using the parameters that Jules set and the rotation that Jules has recommended. But when my setup broke, retrieving which parameter set to use took me a little time to figure
out.
So I would like to have like a line in there that is this is the parameter, the command line that fired the program.
that's exactly what the metadata file is intended for. Is my internet's going crazy here.
Well, you're still coming through.
It's telling me my internet connection's unreliable.
Dave, just a quick question. Did you mean by the total field that you just mentioned? Isn't that just a simple mathematical calculation?
Yes, it is. Yes. That's why I keep asking about it. I just like to stick it in there.
It's the mean squares.
But the file size for a 24-hour period isn't very large.
Yeah, our file sizes are very reasonable.
They're about a meg, the way I've been
calculating. Pies are about 4 meg a day.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Right? Well, maybe they're bigger than I thought. But, actually, the ones I capture, I hide a bunch of the data some of the time for myself. But 86,000 samples odd times however much the line length is, plus whatever the header is. Now, the headers, the headers kind of freeform for, it seems to me.
Have you run the PSWS info program yet that I sent you?
Yes, I have.
And that's the actual header that gets written out every day.
Right. And I see the stuff. It's just not the way I think about some of the stuff, I guess.
So you know, I want to add that John, I'm running all my stuff on an Odroid, and so there's another level of difference.
I'm not familiar with an Odroid. Is that?
Well, this was what we recommended for the Tangerines originally.
Okay.
Which is, it has a GPIO header that's compatible, so that allows us to hook it up. But I'm not using any Pies right now myself. And Dave, I believe, is running Pies, and I believe Jules is running Pies. So,
N2's also.
But I wanted, so I'm an Odroid N2 is what I'm running.
Is an Odroid based on a Debian distribution, or is it an a Mac or a?
No, it's an Ubuntu.
It's Ubuntu.
Okay, so it is Mac or OS based on a.
Yes.
It's an ARM processor.
ARM.
Install a wide variety of different operating systems on it if you want. So, but
because I think the Pi is also ARM based. It's a quad core ARM.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Well, these are hex cores, but that's the main difference. No, it's not.
It really isn't.
It's very little different. It's very little different.
Yeah, there the Odroid's a little bit faster, but it's comparable.
Cool.
So I just wanted you to know that not everybody's on a Pi.
Yeah.
So Pi quirks may not always apply to me.
Yeah, the big quirk as far as a Pi goes is that it's writing to an SD card ordinarily. And that may well impact, some of the miswrites that you see, if there's a power drop.
You use a cheap SD card. I've had some fail on me.
Yeah,
you can get into trouble with that.
Well, you know, the earliest Pis, the Pi ones and twos were hideous about, you know, you know, if you powered them off, you'd pretty much needed to reflash it every time.
Pretty much trashed it.
Yeah. And so the, unless you did a lot of syncs or something, and but they're better now, but still the, you know, the others that have eMMC flash that they write to that's physically, you know, in place, usually that works better. And the Odroids do that, have that. That's one of the things. But then there's some Pis also, that are slowly becoming available. Well, there's Pi 3s that have eMMC flash, lots of them, the CM3s. But the,
here's the thing, though, to remember. At least on the Tangerine side, we're going to be writing a lot of data. And, you know, a ring buffer, I figured out with the, if you're handling six channels at 8 kilosamples per second, that's 13 gig of data per day. Now you're going to destroy an SD card in no time. So we're really recommending that for the Tangerine that you get an external hard drive. And in fact, use a hard drive that is set up for a video surveillance recording, or, you know, the kind of drive that goes into one of those video recording boxes that you have for your TV set. You know, they run all the time and just writing constantly. And they'll
last. Boot drives?
Well, the Western Digital Purple series is.
The Purple series, okay. Because I know the Red series is set up for data storage, but I think Purple is a higher bandwidth.
Well, you know, they have a lot of memory cache in them. Mm. So I've noticed this when I'm storing data to it, as fast as the local host will pump it out, the light only lights up once in a while. So it's putting a whole bunch of stuff in cache, and then it spits it out in a single write every now and then. And that holds down the mechanical wear and tear on the drive. So, I mean, we got to get away from the thinking about writing all this massive amount of data to little SD cards, because people won't be happy when their SD cards are failing 3 months into every experiment.
Well, that's the biggest concern for me writing the WAV file when I'm copying four channels on the grate for generation two, because I'm going to be collecting 8K bytes times four channels per second. And that's going to really tear up the SD card.
Well, you want to just you got to architect it to have a hard drive in the mix.
Okay, I will keep that in mind, because it doesn't. I'm looking at the sustained write speed of the SD cards, and it's getting scary.
They're not designed for that. And you can get a very nice fast large disk now for under $100. So
yeah,
yeah. So I actually saw a Samsung 970. M2 solid state drive that was $59 at Newegg, and it with the new USB booting capability of the Raspberry Pi as of the last issue of Raspbian or Raspberry Pi OS, it's possible to boot off of the SSD drive.
Well, actually,
question,
if you're going to be doing a lot of writes, a mechanical hard drive is actually superior to any kind of solid state device because it doesn't wear out. I'm sorry, Nathaniel, go ahead.
Yeah, are there any, are any of the USB flash drives, are any of them any better than the micro SDs?
It's the same stuff.
Same stuff.
Because the only package. The reason I'm...
Do you mean thumb, like USB thumb drives?
Yeah, because...
those are worse.
They're worse, yeah.
We tried using those for the AM Doppler receivers, and they go out for a powder periodically.
So what do you use for the AM Doppler receivers?
We're using solid state drives.
Solid state drives, okay.
But it's a fairly low data rate.
Yeah.
We're using solid state drives.
Right. The grape, even when it's recording like the 8K of spectrum data, it's going to be a similar data rate to your AM Doppler experiment.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And so like if the grape, you know, I know that hard drives are, you know, under $100, but if we're trying to keep the grape at about $100 too, that you know, add that basically doubles the cost of the grape. So it'd be better to be able to keep it with just the micro SD card, at least for the grape, not for the tangerine.
If you want an exercise in frustration, get one of the Micro Center thumb drives. I can kill one of those in 3 minutes.
Nice. The free ones that they hand out?
Yeah, they're crap. They overheat and die. The charger pump on them is lousy.
You got what you paid for? Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much.
Can you save the 8K? Let's see. I don't know. Can you get it? Save it to RAM disk and send it out.
It's the sustained write speed to the drive that you run into.
Right. So I mean,
most of those are not. They're 90K bytes a second or something like that. It's just
So what if you don't save the data locally and you just send it out over to the server right away?
As long as the server can keep up with it, that'd probably be the better way to do it. But you're probably not going to be doing that over Wi-Fi. That's going to be over Ethernet.
Just buck up and get one of the Western Digital Purple 18 terabyte drives, a mere $525 Amazon. But you can get a single bargain. Terabyte for $49, a Western Digital Purple. So,
yeah,
only 1 terabyte, but pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Well, that actually would probably be good for a lot of applications because if you're going to store, as I said before, if you're going to store 6 channels, 8 kilosamples, you can do that with 13 gigabytes per day. And if you run your ring buffer at 24 hours, you don't even need a terabyte. You don't even need 100 gig.
Okay, so, well, the knee in the curve here for these is 4 terabytes. 4 terabytes, $95. And then you
that's the one that I have.
6 terabytes is 140. So 4 seems to be the sweet spot, under $100.
Yeah, for me, the big issue then is I can't supply power for the drive through the USB port.
No, it has a separate power supply, and it's a hard drive. That's a big hard drive that you
would USB
putting into a PC. So you have to buy a little frame for it.
Yeah, those are like $10.
The mechanical drive is not solid state. So
yeah, we'll have to cross that bridge when we get to it. But that sounds like it's probably the better way to go. One of those 4 terabyte purple drives, external enclosure, and then you can stream stuff to that.
Yeah, it's like 6 times the size of the Raspberry Pi.
What I've been doing with my VLF Raspberry Pi system is that I keep all of the OS functions and all of the utility programs on the SD card, and data collection is done on a USB stick formatted to EXT2. And when that USB stick eventually wears out, which probably would wear out in a couple of years of daily writes, you just get a new one. And that would hopefully solve the problem of power with an external hard drive. The Raspberry Shake project for their Raspberry Pi seismometers, they also recommend the same sort of situation where all of the external wave data or all of the wave data is saved to a USB stick. And so far, I've had success with it with my testing.
That's actually exactly where I was going with my question with the USB sticks. Basically keep the operating system and the code on the micro SD, but then you use relatively cheap USB sticks, and then when they go, but it's not catastrophic.
Yeah, I'm thinking with the way technology is moving forward, when we readdress this, when we're actually doing it in maybe 6 months with the Grape 2, there may be a cheaper or better solution that came out for it. Maybe a solid state M.2 drive might be better than a USB 3 drive or something like that, but who knows? It's constantly changing. So it's just clear that we can't use the SD card that the OS is on to try and save the day, even if it's 64 or 128 gig. It runs out of space pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I think the USB thumb drive might be a viable alternative for the Grape for the data storage because it's relatively cheap compared to a hard drive.
If we can get the right
long term, but you can't do an acquisition to it. That's what we were doing. Well, you can't be continuously writing to it because they just stopped taking data for a while and then start up again. So we were getting discontinuities in the data.
Yeah, what's going on is the solid state drive itself have a charge pump on it that actually creates a negative voltage that they're biasing and charging all the little ions on the transistors. Mm-hmm. And that thing overheats. When it does, it shuts down.
Yeah.
And it takes it 5 to 10 minutes to cool off before it'll start pumping again, before it start writing. And that's what's going on.
Can you cache it in RAM and then...
You don't know when it's going to quit. Okay. It doesn't give you any indication that it's dying. It just shuts off.
So the solid state drive of the same size is not that much more, and that's what we're doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pack it in dry ice.
I like the way you think, Scotty.
It'll be fast.
Take it to Antarctica.
There ought to be a good market for dry ice nowadays.
Yeah. There already is. It's got a lot of COVID vaccine in it.
Yeah, Pfizer is using it all right now.
Yep.
Just in your hole in your backyard, Dave.
Yeah, that's right. It's full of water, frozen.
I looked at the grocery store this evening just out of curiosity in the dry ice thing, and they had a good supply. It's only in football season that we run low.
Actually, it's impacting the cheese makers the most because they use that for slowing down the processing of the fermenting of the cheese.
Wow. Right, I'd heard that.
Bloody murder because it's going to shut them down.
Yeah, we got a lot of good cheese makers here. I'm wondering how they're doing.
Yeah, that's a problem.
It makes you long for the days of toilet paper shortage.
Not entirely.
I think they're going to find out that the Defense Production Act overrides the cheesemakers.
Yep.
Or in this case.
I'm going to
have. So there'll be a run on cheese now.
I'm going to say goodbye, and Scotty, I'll send you those boards.
Okay, will do. And you want me to send you the replacement to you or to Dave?
It doesn't matter either way.
Okay, because you guys see each other.
Yeah, we see. I went over and picked up a board yesterday at his house. So
okay.
73.
Do you need another
73,
Tom.
Do you need another magnetometer RM3100 or not?
It would be nice to have two just in case. You know, I had one that I had from way back in June. And that's the one I'm using right now. That belonged to Dave, didn't it?
Probably. I don't know. I bought a lot of them.
Seems like we bought some spares, so I'll check to see what we
if
got.
If you have one, it'd be nice to have a. Well, I'm testing them.
Hey, and if it's going to be on the air, I'll send you one.
Yes.
I'm going to throw in another thing I forgot to mention that Dave and I were discussing: the ability to test up to 10 magnetometers in the same physical condition at one time.
10 of them now?
Yes. And, well, and I,
Jules
I
can, has two right now.
Yeah, well, yeah, I've got more than that. I've got five or six.
You got six, but two in one system.
Right, but the technical aspect, since they only have three addresses or four addresses rather per, that's the only thing you can do is set 2021, 22, 23. That's it. So I have an I2C multiplexer, however, which lets me to do up to 8 banks of those devices, and I can fit on a 4x6 vector card. I can easily, actually a 4x5 vector card, I can fit 10 units.
Okay, so the next production one, we're just going to send them all to you.
So I could actually test 10 units at one time in the same environment.
Wow. Hey, that's if you bring the address lines out so you can do four different ones per I2C, right?
Exactly, right.
Okay.
I'll send you my calibrated portable black hole for you to be able to check my magnetometers with.
Sounds good.
Now, my wife has a 3.5 Tesla
imager.
3.5 Tesla MR machine.
Ooh, I bet
that'll get your attention.
Actually, they're putting in a 7, so. But
it'll pull the fillings right out of your teeth.
So how far away can you get and still detect that with our magnetometer?
Well, that's a good question. I've kind of wanted to find out, But, you know, they start to frown at me when I'm wandering around with a little pieces of PVC pipe and, uh-huh. and battery packs down over at the medical center. It's been, I've done worse, but it's an open question at the moment.